Now, on a hot summer's day, it's nice to go swimming. And I'm sure all of us who've grown up in this country, we've got memories of going swimming down at the local pool, or perhaps maybe even if we've got a pool in the backyard, of going out on a summer's day and enjoying time in the water. But when you were standing at the edge of the pool, ready to take the plunge, has the thought ever crossed your mind that you'd like to do a Jesus? Now, be honest here. Who hasn't thought about doing this when you're there at the pool? Anyone want to admit to it? Yeah, you've thought this before? Of trying to walk on water. It's a wonderful thought. And we'd like to be able to do it. Now, anyone who's actually tried to walk on water? Yeah, Brendan, how did it go? Pretty badly. Yeah, can you explain sort of what happened when you took your first step?
I tried running.
How far did you get out, like, before you...
When I ran, I actually, like, pushed my foot on the edge.
Yeah.
Face
first into the water, that's probably not too good. I'm sure if we've all tried doing it before, if we said, you know, did you stand or did you sink, we'd probably all have to answer, well, we sank, and we probably sank pretty fast. Now, walking on water is, according to the law of physics, as we currently understand those laws, impossible for us humans to be able to perform. So when Jesus walks across the water to meet his disciples on a boat in the middle of the Sea of Galilee on a wind-swept night, any ideas as to what this miracle might be supposed to signify? Now, if it really happens, and we take it, that's what happened, what's it meant to signify, do you think? Laws of physics don't apply to Jesus? Yeah? Maybe he's above the laws of physics, or when we talk about God, we know God's the one who creates the laws of physics. And by the way, the laws of physics, from our perspective, are really just descriptions of what ordinarily happens from our perspective. Any other thoughts about what the significance of this might be? You know, why all of a sudden would Jesus just walk on water? And why is it recorded in the Bible? It has to be there for a reason, right? You could say, well, is Jesus showing off? Yeah, he's showing off, but what's he trying to show off? Anyway, let's have a think about what the significance of this sign is. And to do that, we need to look at some of the details of the text to capture the significance of this sign. Now, this sign is the fifth of the seven signs recorded in detail by John in chapters 2 to 12. It's set in the evening after the events of the fourth sign, which was the feeding of the 5,000. And that's recorded in the previous verses. Now, like with the fourth sign, the timing of the fifth sign is significant. Jesus' encounter with the Jews in Jerusalem, which is recorded for us in chapter 5, had raised the following questions. Questions were, is Jesus the prophet like Moses, and is he equal with God? Jesus had told his Jewish opponents, if you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote about me. Jesus is implying there that he's the prophet like Moses who has come into the world in fulfillment of what Moses himself said in Deuteronomy 18. And by using his like father, like son argument to justify his healing of people on the Sabbath day, which is a Jewish day of rest, Jesus was making himself out to be equal with God. And so the questions that his Jewish opponents were debating with him were, is Jesus the prophet like Moses, and is he equal with God? What did the fourth sign prove? The feeding of the 5,000. And how about the fifth sign? Jesus walking on water. Well, let's look at the details. It tells us when evening came, this was the evening later on in the day after the events of the feeding of the 5,000. And Jesus' disciples, or more precisely, the 12 apostles, left the mountaintop where Jesus had fed the 5,000, and they went down to the sea and they got into a boat to go across the sea to Capernaum on the other side of the lake. This would have been a journey of around 10 kilometres, which is a relatively short distance away by boat, all things considered. They were relatively close to home, or to the place where most of the 12 apostles were based. So it made sense for them to try and go back home rather than to stay overnight in an isolated place. It also seems that they had set off because it was getting dark and they couldn't afford to wait for Jesus any longer. Remember how the crowd, after the feeding of the 5,000, had wanted to make Jesus king, and Jesus took off to the hills. And the disciples were in the boat waiting for him, expecting him to return from the place that he had sought refuge. And they're still waiting. And it's getting dark, and so they decide to set off on their own. But what happened as they were travelling? Well, we see that the sea became aroused by a strong wind which was blowing. And such a phenomenon is frequent on the Sea of Galilee, where strong winds often arise. It would have been normal for the boats to use their sails, but once the wind had become too strong, it would have been necessary for them to lower the sails and to start rowing instead. And we're told in verse 19 that they had rowed about 25 or 30 stadia. Now back then, a stadium was a measurement that equals around about 185 metres. And so when you work out 25 or 30 times 185 metres, it works out to roughly about 5 kilometres that they had rowed. So that suggests that they had more or less reached halfway in their journey back towards Capernaum. Now with the wind and the waves starting up, they were struggling. When something amazing happened. All of a sudden, they saw Jesus walking towards them, and he was walking on the sea, approaching the boat. Now, here we need to think about what the significance of the fact of Jesus walking on the water is. Is it just to prove that Jesus has control over the physical laws of the universe? Is it just to prove that he has the power to be able to perform miracles? What's the significance of this sign? Well, you can ask a question here. Something that I've suggested to you before is, in order to understand the New Testament, often we have to look where? We have to look to the Old Testament, don't we? So that's what we're going to do. As we consider this sign, we're going to think about what the Old Testament has to say. A lot of things in the New Testament, a lot of things that Jesus did and said, it presupposes a familiarity with the Old Testament. And those things actually interact often with events and concepts in the Old Testament. So when we look at the Old Testament and ask, what does the Old Testament have to say about who has control over the wind and the waves? What do we see? What do you reckon the answer is going to be? Who has control over the wind and the waves? God. What we see is, it's only God. The Old Testament says it's only God who has power over the sea. Back in the beginning, it was God who created the sea and who separated the waters above from the waters below. At the time of the Exodus, what happened there? We see God separating the water of the sea for Israel to pass through. And he did that by sending a strong east wind to blow open a pathway through the sea. The Psalms tell us that the waters take to flight at the sound of God's thunder. And in particular, there's a very important verse that occurs in the Old Testament which is significant for what we see in this sign, and that is Job chapter 9, verse 8. In that verse, we see Job saying of God, "He alone stretches out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea." You see, it's a very significant verse, isn't it? God alone treads on the waves of the sea, according to the Old Testament. Can you see now the significance of the sign of Jesus walking on the water? By walking on the waves of the stormy sea, Jesus was proving his divinity. He was answering one of those questions that his opponents had had. Is he equal with God? But what do we see here? Because Jesus is God in human form, he has power over the waves of the sea. Jesus' Jewish opponents had scoffed at his suggestion that he was the Son of God, but the fifth sign proves that Jesus is indeed equal in power with God the Father. Walking on the water is a sign of his deity. It's something that only God can ordinarily do. Now, the disciples saw Jesus walking on the sea, although initially it seems they weren't too sure about who that person was. Initially, this remarkable event only provoked fear in them. But then Jesus said to them, "It's me. Don't be afraid." And friends, those words that he says there, "It's me, don't be afraid," are also very significant when we see them in the light of the Old Testament. Because in saying, "It's me," or more literally, "I am," we're probably meant to hear an echo of the most sacred name of God to the Jewish people, a name so sacred that the Jewish people dared not pronounce it for fear of misusing God's name, the name Yahweh, which is incorrectly rendered as Jehovah in some Bibles. The name Yahweh means "He is" in Hebrew. God is the great He is. He is who He is. He does what he says he will do. He keeps his word. That's the significance of that name. The name Yahweh speaks to Jewish minds of the faithfulness and the power of God. Back at the time of the Exodus, because of his faithfulness to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, when God promised that he would save their descendants out of slavery to a foreign nation, at the time of the Exodus, we see God keeping his word. He saves Israel out of slavery in Egypt. And by saying to his disciples, "It's me," or more literally, "I am," he's echoing the words of that name. He's echoing the significance of the name Yahweh. And by saying, "Don't be afraid," we also hear another echo. An echo of the words, "Fear not, for I am with you." Friends, here we see that Jesus is Yahweh incarnate. Because Yahweh, God himself, was with them, they had no need to be afraid. Jesus' words there, perhaps the disciples didn't understand the full significance of that, but his words had the effect of calming his disciples' fear. Knowing that it was their master who was coming to them, they quickly welcomed Jesus onto the boat. But notice what John the narrator tells us in verse 21, after Jesus entered the boat. Can anyone see the significant detail in verse 21? After Jesus got in the boat, what happened? They reached their destination. Okay? It tells us that when Jesus got into the boat, immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. Now think about that. When Jesus got in the boat, where did he get in the boat? We assume it was around about halfway on their journey. But when he gets in the boat, immediately they're at their destination. What's going on there? Once again, our ears should be open to hearing echoes of the Old Testament here. And as we turn to the Old Testament, in particular to Psalm 107, we will understand the significance of that little detail. Psalm 107 is a wonderful psalm that recounts four kinds of situation in which people often call out to God for salvation. People who are lost in the desert, prisoners, foolish sinners, and sailors caught in a storm. In all those difficult situations, people often cry out to God, don't they? Well, let's have a look at what it says in Psalm 107 about the sailors who are caught in a storm, but who call out to God for salvation. We can see those verses in Psalm 107, verses 23 to 30, and I'll read them out to you. It says, "Some go down to the sea in ships, doing business on the great waters. They saw the deeds of the Lord, his wondrous works in the deep, for he commanded and raised the stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. They mounted up to heaven, then plunged down to the depths. Their courage melted away in their evil plight. They reeled and staggered like drunken men and were at their wits' end. But then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them from their distress. He made the storm be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed. Then they were glad that the waters were quiet, and he brought them to their desired harbor. See the details there? As soon as Jesus got into the boat, immediately they were at their desired destination. What happened that day on the Sea of Galilee was a fulfillment of the words of Psalm 107. Only God can save sailors from storms at sea. Only God can bring people safely to their desired destination. This small detail shows us, therefore, that Jesus is God. Walking on the water proves his divinity, that he is the great I am, and delivering disciples safely across the sea proves that he is Yahweh, the Lord, who saves all those who cry out to him for salvation. And friends, if Jesus is God in human form, which is the significance of this sign, what does that then mean about his relationship to Moses, which is also a topic of debate at that time with his Jewish opponents? Obviously, if Jesus is equal with God the Father, he must be greater than Moses. Now think about it. Was Moses able to walk on the water? At the time of the Exodus, what happened? Did Moses just go walking across the water and lead Israel across the water with him? No. Staring at the sea, blocking their escape from Egypt, all Moses could do was pray and wait until God had made the dry land appear in the heart of the sea, before Moses could lead Israel through the sea to safety. He wasn't able to walk on the water himself. He had to wait for God to take control of the waters. Contrast that to Jesus, who doesn't need dry land to walk on. Do you sometimes doubt that Jesus is who he says he is? Do you sometimes doubt that Jesus is God in human form? The fifth sign here is proof of his divinity, that he alone is God, and that he alone can save us and bring us safely to our desired destination. I hope that every one of us here will understand the significance of this sign.